Greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association tips off a new season later Tuesday night with three games. LeBron James and the defending champion Cleveland Cavaliers will host the New York Knicks, and that will be followed by games in Oregon and California. The Portland Trail Blazers are at home against the Utah Jazz, and in the final game of the evening, the Golden State Warriors will host the San Antonio Spurs. Our VOA basketball fans will remember, for the first time in 19 years, the Spurs are without Tim Duncan, their 15-time All-Star forward who retired July 11th. The Warriors will also have a new look. After losing to LeBron and the Cavs in the NBA Finals in June, Golden State reloaded by signing superstar Kevin Durant, the most coveted free agent available in the offseason. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2016, let's look back on the NBA Finals. And the package begins with LeBron commenting on leading Cleveland to the title.
I came back for a reason. I came back to bring a championship to our city. I knew what I was capable of doing. I knew what I learned in the last couple of years that I was gone. And when I came back, I knew I had the right ingredients and the right blueprint to help this franchise get back to a place that we've never been. And right now, it's just excitement. You know, it's not even relief. It's just excitement for us as a team, as a franchise, as a city, as a community, to be able to continue to build up our city, continue to be an inspiration to our city. It means everything, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
That's LeBron James, happy to be a part of the city of Cleveland's first major professional sports championship in 52 years. LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers edged the host Golden State Warriors 93-89 in Oakland, California, in a thrilling Game 7 of the National Basketball Association Finals. It was the first NBA title for the Cavaliers, who entered the league in 1970 as an expansion club. The Cavs are also the first team to come back from a 3-1 deficit in NBA Finals history. In addition, the Cavaliers gain revenge after losing to the Warriors in the 2015 NBA Finals 4-2. The decisive Game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals is being described as one of the great games in the history of the league. It featured 20 lead changes and 11 ties. LeBron James was a unanimous choice as the most valuable player of the NBA Finals after finishing with a triple-double, 27 points, 11 rebounds, and 11 assists, along with 3 blocks, including a key block of Andre Iguodala to prevent a go-ahead layup with 1 minute and 50 seconds left. Now, with less than a minute left in the game and the score tied at 89, Cleveland star guard Kyrie Irving hit a crucial 3-point shot to give the Cavs the lead for good.
And it was 89-89 in that fourth quarter. So I was just thinking the next team that scores has a great chance of winning the championship, and I hope that we can be the team that's on that end.
Kyrie Irving finished with 26 points in Game 7. Remember, VOA basketball fans, Kyrie broke his kneecap in Game 1 of last year's NBA Finals and missed the rest of the series. On Sunday night, Irving outplayed Golden State's 2-time league most valuable player, Stephen Curry.
Yeah, it stung. It sucked to watch him, you know, celebrate, and wish that would have been us. But at the end of the day, you congratulate them for accomplishing what they set out to do. And it'll be a good image for us over the summer and all next season to remember so that, you know, we come back stronger. That's all you can do.
Steph Curry had 17 points in Game 7, but he shot poorly, missing 13 of the 19 shots he took. Steph's teammate Draymond Green was Golden State's best player on Sunday night. He scored 32 points, grabbed 15 rebounds, and had 9 assists. But after winning a record 73 games during the regular season, the Warriors came up short in the NBA Finals. Talk to us, Draymond.
It's been an amazing year. We failed at one goal we had, you know, but this whole season isn't a failure to me. You know, we accomplished some great things. We didn't reach the end prize, but there'll be more years for that.
Draymond Green talks about not reaching the end prize, that is, the NBA championship. Well, Draymond did get a pretty nice prize after the NBA Finals. In August, he and Klay Thompson and new Warriors teammate Kevin Durant helped win a gold medal for the USA in men's basketball at the Rio Olympics in Brazil. In more Olympic news, IOC President Thomas Bach recently urged Tokyo's mayor not to change the rules of competition after city authorities announced several changes to the venues for the 2020 Games in order to cut spiraling costs. The budget had been estimated at $15 billion, 6 times the original cost. It's the latest setback for the IOC, which has seen several cities pull out of bidding to host the games over cost concerns. Henry Ridgewell reports.
It's 4 years until the Tokyo 2020 Summer Olympics, a bid that succeeded on its billing as a safe pair of hands. But the city's new mayor has pledged to tackle spiraling costs. The venues for basketball, taekwondo, and cycling have been moved outside of Tokyo to existing facilities, and other construction projects are under review. Meeting IOC President Thomas Bach this week, Yuriko Koike said she owed it to her electorate.
In particular, the people of Tokyo, as it is their public funds that we will be spending. It is necessary that we win their understanding.
The IOC president urged the mayor not to change the rules of the competition.
We agreed that we will continue in this way of cooperation. To make the Olympic Games Tokyo 2020 the most sustainable and most feasible games possible.
Tokyo's fear over spiraling costs was echoed in Rome, whose mayor last month announced its withdrawal from the race to host the 2024 Games.
Con queste Olimpiadi di fatto, con le Olimpiadi.
What these Olympics require is taking on additional debt. New debt for Romans and for all Italians. That is what we are asked to take on. Sincerely, we don't feel that is right.
The IOC faces a growing problem that fewer and fewer cities are prepared to stump up the costs, says Olympic historian Philip Barker.
We've seen it with the Winter Games for 2022. It was only Beijing and Almaty after two excellent candidates, Oslo and Stockholm, who would have thought were perfectly suited to the Winter Games, pulled out because of costs.
The US city of Boston and the German city of Hamburg also withdrew their bids for the 2024 Summer Games last year. Beijing's 2008 Games and the Sochi Winter Olympics in 2014 both cost tens of billions of dollars. The IOC is now trying to change the image of the Games from one of excess to one of sustainability.
Let's make a positive virtue out of not building new facilities, out of using what they call demountable facilities, that is to say temporary builds that can then be deconstructed and sent somewhere else.
Some want the Summer Games permanently located in their original home in Greece, but that's not realistic, argues Barker.
Part of the attraction of the Olympics is they do go from place to place. It's an international sporting event. It isn't just for one city.
But the IOC still has work to do to convince many world cities that hosting the Olympics is a boon, not a burden. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go to Singapore, where world number one Angelique Kerber of Germany scored her second straight victory Tuesday at the Women's Tennis Association Finals. Kerber defeated Romania's Simona Halep in straight sets 6-4 and 6-2 to virtually book a spot in the semifinals at the Elite 8-player event. The German star says the match was closer than the score indicates.
The last game was also very close, and yeah, you never know what's happened when she win one, two games, and then she is back. So I was really trying to stay in the moment and playing point by point. So that's why I think it was a really close match for me.
Angelique Kerber overtook Serena Williams as the world's top-ranked female player last month when she won her second Grand Slam title at the U.S. Open in New York City. Serena pulled out of the WTA finals in Singapore last week because of a shoulder injury. Her withdrawal guarantees that Kerber will end 2016 with the number one ranking. Angie tells us the number one ranking has also boosted her confidence.
Of course, I have much more confidence right now because I know how to win very big matches and tight matches. And I know what to do to go for it and just take the game in my hands. And of course, I believe much more in my game and in myself than like 12 months ago.
German tennis star Angelique Kerber speaking at the WTA Finals in Singapore. From Singapore, let's go to Shanghai, China, where first-round action tees off Thursday at the HSBC Champions Golf Tournament. One of the top Americans in the field is Patrick Reed, who is currently ranked 7th in the world. Reporter Nick Dye asked Patrick what it takes to win on the Shanghai course.
There's just patience, especially around this kind of golf course. It's a little different setup than previous years because of the grass. Normally they have that really thick rye rough, and now it's kind of more of the, you know, it's a little wispier, but at the same time, you have to really judge the lie. So it's just kind of a little bit more methodical around the golf course than before.
But your past experience here, that'll help, presumably?
Oh, for sure. You know, the main thing around this golf course is positioning off the tee. And, you know, it really doesn't matter what kind of rough or what kind of conditions, you're always kind of playing to certain spots. And that's going to be key this week, and you know, that's why we're out here grinding away and hopefully find those right spots.
How much benefit will you feel from that wonderful performance at the Ryder Cup?
A lot. You know, anytime you can play really well in that kind of condition, you know, it's key. And for me, the main thing is staying patient and attack when you're supposed to attack. And at Ryder Cup, you have so much pressure because you're attacking all the time, and there's times throughout the singles match that you have to kind of gear back, play to center of greens, etc. So it kind of teaches you how to get in that attack mode, but then pull back. And, you know, it's a key because for me, I like to get impatient, like to go for certain things. And, you know, I've done it a couple times this year. Well, not this year, at this golf course that, you know, have bit me. So, you know, it's going to be a learning curve. And I've learned from all my mistakes in previous years. And now it's just go out and do what I need to do.
Well, I appreciate this is a totally different environment, but you can draw on that experience, that confidence, the self-belief, I take it.
Oh, for sure. You know, anytime you play like you did at the Ryder Cup, it you know, it really puts in perspective on how well you can play at any time. And you just need to be able to tap into it. And, you know, if you get off to a little slower start, you just have to remind yourself that you can get to that position. You can rally off 5-6 birdies. And, you know, that's a key, especially out on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis, because, you know, golf's a marathon, not a sprint. Yeah, Ryder Cup is a sprint, not a marathon.
That's American golfer Patrick Reed. And Patrick was talking with reporter Nick Dye in Shanghai, China. Patrick is aiming for his second title of the year in Shanghai. At the end of August, he won the Barclays tournament on Long Island, New York. a victory that automatically qualified him for the 2016 U.S. Ryder Cup team. The USA beat Europe 17-11 earlier this month at Hazeltine National Golf Club in the U.S. state of Minnesota to win the Ryder Cup for the first time since 2008. Russian voters have chosen a wolf as their mascot for the 2018 World Cup football finals. The balloting took place for 18 months, and it was conducted on the website of FIFA, World Football's governing body. The announcement was broadcast live on Channel 1 television in Moscow. Now, three candidates reached the short list in the mascot vote: the wolf, a tiger, and a cat. And let's give a Sunnyside of Sports shout-out to Ekaterina Bakarova, a Russian student who designed the wolf. If you're keeping score, the wolf got 51.7% of the vote, the tiger got 26.8%, and the cat got 20.3%. Now, if my math is correct, that still leaves 0.2% unaccounted for, so we'll file that in the I don't know VOA Sports Fans. Russia's Deputy Prime Minister Vitaly Mutko, in his capacity as chairman of the 2018 FIFA World Cup Local Organizing Committee, officially named the wolf Zabivaka. Zabivaka. For those still keeping score, if my Russian is correct, that translates to the one who scores. The one who scores, Andrew Palcheski. He knows a little Russian. He's nodding his head in agreement. And he joins us now here in Studio 22. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Actually, that I know very little Russian, Andrew, but I gave it my best shot with that.
That sounded that pretty good. I don't know very much Russian myself, only some very, very basic phrases. But it sounded good for me.
I guess we'll be hearing more and more as we get closer to the World Cup.
I imagine we will be. For sure.
Well, what is trending in the sports world on this Tuesday, Andrew?
Well, sticking with the World Cup, we have breaking news, sad breaking news. Carlos Alberto Torres, the captain of the 1970s Brazil soccer team that won the World Cup, has passed away at the age of 72. So he is a trending topic worldwide. Of course, that 1970 Brazil soccer team, considered one of the greatest ever. And certainly he, one of the greatest captains ever of the greatest teams ever. So a lot of tributes pouring in, a nationally beloved figure in Brazil. So we're seeing that breaking news just now on social media as it happens, and people remember him.
One of our friends in Brazil, Andrew, Luis Piazet, he was filing regular reports for us during the Olympics. I'm checking out his Facebook page right now, and sure enough, he's got a photo of Carlos Alberto Torres, and it shows Luis interviewing him back in the day. So shout out to Luis, and also we remember Carlos Alberto Torres. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, tonight is the night, the start of the World Series in Cleveland, Ohio. Of course, the Cleveland Indians will be playing the Chicago Cubs. And we're starting to see the social media campaigns for the two teams. So we'll start with the Chicago Cubs, the visiting team. Their hashtag that they're using is hashtag fly the W.
Now for fly the W. Okay.
Now for the sports fans out there that don't know, every time that the Cubs win at home at Wrigley Field, they put up this flag. It's a big blue W for win. And that's how they used to, in the old days, show out in the city whether the team won or lost. They'd raise this flag. So
Okay. That's
kind of the symbol for the Chicago Cubs. And so this Fly the W hashtag is being used by Cubs fans throughout the United States and around the world, hoping they can fly the W tonight, even though they're going to be in Cleveland. There'll be a lot of W flags, I'm sure, in Chicago. And in fact, when you use that hashtag Fly the W, you get a little W emoji. That little flag pops up as an emoji. So if you go on Twitter and you use that hashtag Fly the W, you can take a look and see what that flag kind of looks like. You also see, if you go on Twitter, some other people using that flag throughout the Chicago area. At O'Hare Airport, which is the biggest airport in Chicago, one of the biggest airports in the United States and
even
the world.
Might be the busiest airport in the
U.S. It's usually up there as, you know, in the top three or so is busiest. But in the main concourse of O'Hare Airport, they have all international flags that they usually have up. Well, they've replaced all those flags with W flags. So when you go in and fly into Chicago's O'Hare Airport, you're going to know it's Cubs country in Chicago. And we also had the Chicago Blackhawks hockey team. They tweeted out the team holding that W flag. It said, "Congrats, Cubs. Good luck in the World Series. Chicago is ready to fly the W." So a lot of excitement in Chicagoland tonight. Now, on the other side, we have the Cleveland Indians. They're going to be the home team tonight. They're hosting the game tonight because the American League winners, they're hosting the American League during the All-Star game, won against the National League. And in addition to the bragging rights, that gives them home field advantage throughout the World Series. So as the American League team, they get home field advantage. So they're using the hashtag Rally Together. When you use that hashtag, you get a C for Cleveland. That's their symbol that they have. And the same things that we're seeing from Chicago, we're seeing among Cleveland fans. We're seeing a lot of excitement. There's no W flag or anything that they have, but just the imagery of, for example, the World Series logo being painted on the field at Progressive Field is getting a lot of attention. There was a helicopter shot of one of the news stations in Cleveland flying over the stadium, kind of surveying it, and it says World Series on the field. And they said how great it is to see that on the field again here in Cleveland. We're also seeing some fun images. For example, in the area around the stadium, someone took a picture. They're charging. Now, this is my trivia question to you. You asked me about the ticket prices yesterday, so I'm going to ask okay. you about the parking. How much do you think a parking spot is going for in the parking garage right next to Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, right next to the baseball stadium?
All right, I'll take a guess. How about $25? $25?
It is $100 to park downtown. Now, part of the reason why that is in addition to the World Series tonight, tonight is also the start of the National Basketball Association season.
In
Cleveland, with the Cleveland Cavaliers playing the New York Knicks, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be getting their championship rings tonight in Cleveland. So Yahoo Sports actually tweeted out, and they had a great line. They said, "Cleveland's Ontario Street is the center of the sports world on Tuesday night," because Ontario Street is a street that runs along not only Progressive Field, where the Cleveland Indians and Chicago Cubs will be playing in the World Series, but the Quicken Loans Arena, or the Q, where the Cleveland Cavaliers will play the New York Knicks and get their championship rings. So a lot of people noting that this is the night to be in Cleveland. If you are a sports fan, it's the sports worlds kind of converge in this one strip of land in Cleveland, Ohio. And in fact, we're seeing, you know, the hashtag #AllIn216 trending. Now, this was the hashtag that the Cleveland Cavaliers used last year when they won the NBA championship. 216 is the area code for telephone numbers in Cleveland. Well, we're seeing a resurgence of that, not just for the World Series, but for Cleveland kicking off their season tonight. So not only are we seeing hashtag rally together, but that hashtag all in 216 as well.
Andrew, I have a question for you. It's not a trivia question. I guess it's more of a hypothetical question. If LeBron and the Cavs can wrap things up in, say, a couple hours at their Quicken Loans Arena, so maybe end the game about 9:30 local time in Cleveland, maybe LeBron can head over to watch the Indians play.
That's very possible. I don't know how this is going to impact. I speculated that perhaps LeBron James could throw out the first pitch, or the whole team even could go and throw out the first pitch. I mean, I don't know if they can rush over to Progressive Field, throw out the first pitch, maybe in their uniforms, run back over to the queue. I don't know if that's quite possible, but we'll see. No, I think for sure the team is going to be keeping up with the score just across the street from them. As we talked about with the Chicago Blackhawks, and as we're talking now with the Cleveland Cavaliers, there's been a lot of love in the sports world outside of baseball for these two teams. The city of Chicago and the city of Cleveland have wanted this for a very long time, and the sports realms in those cities, whether it be hockey or basketball or what have you, are all paying a lot of attention to those baseball games. So I wouldn't be surprised if the game, maybe on halftime, they have it on in the locker room, they take a peek at what the score is, and then afterwards, if they can't throw out the first pitch before the game, they might have to rush over afterwards and maybe catch the tail end of the World Series.
And quickly, from a historical note, should the Indians win the World Series, it would be Cleveland's second major title of 2016 after a gap of more than 50 years.
Astounding. who would have thunk it, as they say?
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew. And that wraps up the October 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. I get it. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
About 1 billion people, or every seventh person, suffers from at least one neglected tropical disease. Neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs, are chronic disabling illnesses that thrive in areas with poor sanitation, lack of clean drinking water, and scant access to medication. NTDs have blinded, disabled, disfigured, and killed their victims for centuries, devastating individuals and entire communities. They affect the ability of children to thrive and to learn, and of adults to work, thus perpetuating the cycle of poverty. Nonetheless, most of these diseases are frequently preventable or treatable, often with low-cost medications. So 10 years ago, working through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, the United States government launched a public-private partnership to treat those who suffer from NTDs and to help prevent contamination and spread of the parasites that cause them through improved sanitation, preventive treatments, and mass drug distribution campaigns. Working in partnership with the United Kingdom's Department for International Development, the Conrad Hilton Foundation, the Queen Elizabeth Diamond Jubilee Trust, and many more, USAID has been instrumental in the delivery of more than 1.6 billion treatments to prevent and treat seven of the most common NTDs. Some 743 million people across 25 countries directly benefited from these treatments. Much of the medication was donated by pharmaceutical companies, which have given over $11 billion worth of drugs free of charge to the countries where USAID supports mass treatment campaigns. Moving forward, over the next 5 years, USAID and its partners plan to provide 1.3 billion treatments, leverage $6 billion in donated drugs, and prevent more than 585 million cases of NTDs. The partners hope to eliminate trachoma, the world's leading cause of preventable blindness. Lymphatic filariasis, a painful and disfiguring parasitic infection transmitted by mosquitoes. And to break the transmission of diseases like schistosomiasis by improving sanitation. Working together with our partners over the past 10 years, said USAID Administrator Gail Smith, we have figured out an approach that works, and freed over 100 million people from these parasitic worms and bacterial infections that have held communities back for too long. Now is the time to double down and reach scale.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look at the role of the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office of African Affairs. We'll discuss the impact of the office as it seeks to improve the quality of life for the District of Columbia's diverse African-born population. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 1730 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.